Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law, a commentator for BBC Radio 5 Live, which is who I'll be working for at the O2 Arena. The ATP World Tour Finals is due to start in just a couple of days' time. Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport is with me, not alongside me, with me, because we're in separate places right now. Catherine will be working for TalkSport 2, commentating for them. And Catherine, we are together here on the Tennis Podcast, as we always are. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks. I've plastered a smile on my face this week in hopes that it will affect my mood and make me slightly chirpier than I was last week. But no promises.
No promises expected or given by Catherine Whittaker. However, it's been a bit of an eventful week, hasn't it? In the wider world, I kind of just don't want to think about it too much because so much has happened. I've almost given up on pole vault this week, almost.
In despair at polling in general.
And in despair at polling, in despair at voting.
Yeah, it's been let's be honest, it's been a bad week for polling and I would say voting as well. This week for me is evidence that if evidence were needed, pole vault is not a good thing.
However, the good news is, folks, that we're still having pole vault.
If we've learned anything from this week, it's don't ask people because they're silly.
Oh, I see. Well, we're going to ask our listeners, however,
the people can't be trusted. No, that if we've learned anything.
Not our listeners. Our listeners are clued up and they know what to say about the important issues in tennis. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the ATP World Tour Finals and assessing the groups because the draw was made just a day after our last episode recorded. We've got the order of play for the first couple of days as well. It is exciting, actually. You know, sometimes I think, Catherine, that you can almost have too much tennis, and I think the off season is a good thing to have. But even with basically a week since the last tournament in Paris, I'm pretty much ready to go again. And about you? I mean, I don't have to do much. I mean, all I have to do is sit there and watch it, but you know.
David Law, the Energizer Bunny of the tennis journalism world. Yeah, I mean, a week is enough. A week is enough to recharge. There are some periods of the season where you feel like there isn't even that week, where it is just relentless. But yeah, it's enough to have whetted the appetite. Did you watch the draw? Did you watch the Skyping, David?
I didn't really understand what was going on. I mean, you tried to explain this to me on the last show, and I tried to log in. I saw Rob Curling of Eurosport fame doing a splendid job of hosting it and I saw a picture of Gael Monfils and Andy Murray on the screen. But it was a bit much to get my pea-sized brain around, I tell you that.
I really enjoyed it. I thought Rob did a marvellous job. That was not an easy gig. As a fellow Eurosport presenter, I would have recoiled at the prospect of having to host something live whilst also having a virtual internet-based chat with the tennis players on a big screen. And apparently there were internet issues in the hotel and everybody had to decamp. Marin Cilic had to decamp to Gael Monfils' hotel room. But because there was a different length of delay on on each of their lines, one of them had to be shut in a bedroom while the other one was out in the lounge. So, but I thought it was a really nice idea, and I thought it worked, frankly.
She says all this, very bashful, Catherine Whittaker, but this is somebody who did Facebook Live at the US Open, and my word, she was not looking forward to that when it was first mooted. But anyway, it went particularly well, and Catherine Whittaker is now a Facebook Live star. Rob Curling is now the master of Skype. He's also a tennis podcast listener, so hello, Rob. And, what it has ended up giving us in terms of a draw is... I mean, if I could have handpicked the draw, that's pretty much what I would have gone for, personally, because I just think it's so interesting to put Andy Murray up. If you haven't seen the draw, Andy Murray has got the most difficult draw he could have possibly got in my eyes. He's got Stan Wawrinka, Marin Cilic, who beat him in Cincinnati. He's got Kei Nishikori, who beat him at the US Open. So it's got everything, that group. I mean... Arguably, you could say the weaker group is the other one, because I think particularly because Milos Raonic is seemingly not fully fit, and there are question marks over how fit he'll be when match time comes. Gael Monfils is an unknown quantity, as is Dominic Thiem, and Novak Djokovic is the best player in the world on paper in many ways, but he's struggling of late. So there's just so many question marks.
Hang on a sec. No. On paper, he's categorically not the best player in the world at the moment. You could say not on paper he is, but the paper says he's not. Sorry to be pedantic with you there, David.
The first 6 months of the year, he won two Grand Slam titles.
No. You said on paper, which means, you know, officially. And officially, Andy Murray's the best player in the world. I'm not saying there's not an argument that Novak Djokovic still is, but on paper, Andy Murray is. So... moving on. You said on paper, David. You said on paper.
Yeah, but what about the paper that is... No, hold on a minute. What about the paper that says former champions elect?
No, David. We all know what on paper means. Anyway, hopes of a less arsey Catherine Whittaker this week are fading, aren't they? Fading fast. Anyway.
They've gone.
Well, Djokovic has never lost to any of the three people in his group, so... the draw went pretty sweetly for him, and there are fitness concerns over all of them, frankly. Raonic, Monfils, Thiem, you know, I won't go into it again, but you know what I think. I'm worried.
Oh, yeah, because Monfils has not been... He missed out on Paris as well, didn't
he? So, a dream draw for Djokovic and a nightmare draw for Andy Murray, given that this is an event where he's traditionally not played well. I know it's a different kettle of fish this year. There's more on the line. He's the world number one, etc., etc. But, boy, is that a nightmare draw for him. It makes it very, very interesting.
It does. He starts against Marin Cilic on Monday night. And even that, to me, was a bit of a surprise, because he is typically started on a Sunday, hasn't he? He's typically got the tournament off and running. And I think most people expected that to happen again. It hasn't. That means the first day is the Djokovic group. I really dislike the way the draw has ended up falling. And I like the way... the order of players ended up falling. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's interesting that Murray's not kicking off. For me, that's a slight disadvantage, because it means if you do get through your group, you don't have the rest day in between the group matches and the semi-finals and then final. But, I mean, given that they're best of three set matches, that's not a huge factor, but it's a small thing. I don't know why that decision has been made. I think Djokovic Thiem, if Thiem is fit and healthy and raring to go, is a very good prospect to kick things off on Sunday afternoon. I will look forward to that very much. But he's not got a great... he's never really been able to muster much of a challenge so far against Dominic Thiem. But against Novak Djokovic as Dominic Thiem. But I hope he can do a little bit better and make a match of it and show the London crowd what he can do, Dominic Thiem, because other crowds around the world have seen it. He hasn't done brilliantly at Wimbledon. We don't see him at Queen's. You know, London is yet to really be fully acquainted with the brilliance and the joy of Dominic Thiem in full flow. So I hope he can at least show that. On the other side of things, I mean, I can't see Andy Murray coming through that group unscathed. I'm not saying he's not going to make it through, but I don't see him winning all those group stage matches. I think he's going to falter somewhere. I wouldn't like to say exactly where. Most likely Wawrinka.
Where do you think he'll fall,
most
Catherine?
Likely Wawrinka, probably. But it could be any one of the three. I do think he will. I think he will progress to the semi-finals, but he will lose a match along the way. There you go. An unsolicited prediction.
I know. What's got into you? I mean, we haven't even done pole vault yet, and she's already throwing her predictions around. I'd like to see. I think the O2 is the perfect platform for Dominic Thiem to show what he's all about. Now there is the question mark over his fitness, but I'm not sure Wimbledon will get to see the best of him. Maybe eventually, but Wawrinka has not always found it to his liking. He had these players with the big wind-up strokes. I think that swift, lower bouncing court, it can make life difficult. I'd like to think, I mean, obviously we don't exactly know what the O2's going to look like in terms of a surface and the bounce and the height and all the rest of it, but I like to think that Thiem could really play his best stuff on that court, in that surroundings. And a little bit like Wawrinka, we often make the comparison because of their style of play. Thiem is a guy, I think, who can come out onto a court with very few people knowing who he is, but leave with an absolute legion of fans because of the breathtaking nature of his tennis. He can make you gasp with the power in which he can hit the ball, that whiplash feel, that power that makes you shudder, that you just can't believe what you're seeing. And he could rock Djokovic back on his heels. Whether it's enough to beat him is another matter.
Absolutely. I think if the right Dominic Thiem shows up, you know, fresh as a daisy, I don't think they've met. In fact, they definitely haven't met since that French Open semi-final, which was obviously a huge occasion in Dominic Thiem's career, the biggest occasion in his career so far. And he was pretty exhausted going into that and wasn't able to muster much of a challenge. They've not played since then, which is interesting. And I would agree. I think, you know, in the right set of circumstances, why shouldn't he flourish, Dominic Thiem? But then I'd have said the same in Vienna and in Paris. And it was all a bit of a damp squib there. So he's a bit of a mystery to me at the moment. But I hope he does once, twice, three times, five times, who knows, show that London crowd what he's about and how brilliant he is for tennis.
Before they get underway, I think the doubles draw is really cool this year. I don't know why, I'm just looking at the various matchups, and they start with the Bryan brothers against Dodig and Mello. I just feel as though this could be the last time we see the Bryan brothers on this stage. Maybe it isn't, but I wonder whether it is. And I think it's pretty cool that they are there, that they open the play, and we get to see them again. And then after that, there's Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez opening the evening session against Trent Huey and Max Murney. I mean, hold on a minute. How old's Max Murney? He must be about 58.
He's deep into his 40s. I'm certain of that. He's definitely into his 40s. Yeah, I mean, the Bryans have hinted at it. Well, more than hinted at it themselves, haven't they? They haven't said anything. How old is he?
39.
No, he's surely in his 40s.
He's been messing about.
He's lying.
Passport,
he's doing
he?
A Nicole Scherzinger. He's probably been 39 for the past 5 years.
I know, I have.
There comes a point. Yeah, I mean, it's a real unknown, the Bryan brothers. I do think they one day quite soon they will just say, sorry, that's it. I mean, which one of it? It's Mike that has the kids, isn't it? It's Mike, I think, that has three kids.
You're asking the wrong person here. I thought they both got kids, but there we are.
I'm pretty well, one of them has three kids. And the eldest is just coming up to five, and he has said in the past that he has serious reservations about continuing on tour once his kids were at school age. It's all very well preschool when they can come on the road with you and they can have a sort of weird fun life on the road, but once it gets to school time, that's a completely different kettle of fish, and he has said that pretty openly. So there's a big question mark from 2017 onwards over those two. So I'd love to see them have a, perhaps not a last hurrah, but a one of the last hurrahs. That really catchy expression. One of the last hurrahs in London. Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Well, Bob Bryan has certainly got a son because he is showing on his Twitter feed a picture from October where it was the birthday of his son called Richie. And Richie looks very happy. So there we are. A bit of a baby update there. I'm not sure how many Mike's got. Haven't got round to looking at that yet. But anyway, they're going to be in action against Doddig and Mello. Then it's Murray and Suarez against Trettihuey and Max Murney. Then in the evening session on the Sunday, Milos Raonic against Gael Monfils. And goodness knows what sort of physical state those two are going to be in when they get out there. What's going to happen, Catherine, in that group? Djokovic team, Raonic, Monfils, do you see Djokovic going through without a blemish?
Oh, I thought you were just going to say, do you see Djokovic going through? And I was going to say yes, very confidently, and that would be the end of that. But unfortunately, you've put an addendum on that. I definitely think he's going through, given how brilliant the draw is. Whether he's going through unblemished, if Gael Monfils is fit, I could see him doing something really special in the atmosphere of the O2. I think there's a possible stumble in there, but given the head-to-heads, I know we had a head-to-head monumentally overturned in Paris against Djokovic last week, but given the head-to-heads, I will probably say that he'll come through unscathed. But I do think there's a chance that Monfils could surprise him.
I think team is the most likely to upset him personally. Day one, before he's really got his feet under the on the surface and comfortable. Once Djokovic, I mean, if you remember last year, Djokovic lost to Federer in the group stages, but then he came back to beat him in the final. I think once he gets set, if he gets some rhythm, then he's going to be very hard to stop, certainly in the early rounds. But I don't see Raonic or Monfils beating him personally. I think maybe if Raonic was fit enough, he could do what Cilic did and play a great match. And with Djokovic a bit out of form at the moment, that might be enough. But no, I think Djokovic goes through 3-0 personally. But team is the question mark to that for me. But, you know, it's been quite hard to predict Djokovic of late. Who's going to go through? Let's assume Djokovic is going through.
Which of his coaching entourage is he going to show up with?
The lot of them. He's already said Becker and Vida is going to be there.
What about Amaury Pasman?
I don't know. You know, he's going to be there as well.
He's the one the world really wants to see now.
I wouldn't mind having a chat with him, actually. I've got some life issues I could work out.
Oh, my God. Hashtag meeting of minds.
Yeah.
I don't think you need Amaury Paz, David.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure. I think we could find some common ground.
I think if either of us do, I need more Amaury Paz. I think you're set.
Okay.
For Amaury Paz. I think more David Law and Amaury Paz would be just too much perkiness.
Right. Okay. Well, that's why you're my sort of co-host on the tennis podcast, is because we sort of even each other out in terms of general mood, really, don't we?
Yes, on aggregate we're just one normal human being. The aggregate of the two of us,
correct. So hold on, who's going through with Djokovic then out of that group into the semis?
Who's going through? So Djokovic is going through, and
I'm going first. I'm going to say Dominic Thiem's going through. There you go.
Who's going through? Yeah, go on. I don't think Raonic is fit, quite honestly, so then it's between Monfils and team. I'll give him a chance to Dominic Thiem's going through, David. I feel really positive about it.
Okay. Catherine says Dominic Thiem. I'm just hastily looking up the head-to-head between Thiem and Monfils to see if I can change my mind. But anyway, I can't seem to find that, so not to worry. The other group, well, you reckon that Andy Murray will go through, but maybe with a problem. Marin Cilic is his first opponent. I can see where you're coming from. And then it's going to be, well, they basically play the winners of the first two matches against each other in the second one, don't they? Stan Wawrinka up against Kei Nishikori. I mean, they had They've had some really good matches over the time, haven't they? I don't know. I think maybe Nishikori, you know. I think Nishikori might come through that.
Just by the by, Team and Morpheus have played once in Umag last year and Team won, but that's Clay. And, I mean, not that Morpheus is any slouch on Clay, but obviously a very different...
I'm still going with Team.
But, yeah, I'm going with Team as well.
You copied.
Sorry, what was the question?
Nishikori or Wawrinka in the other group?
Nishikori or Wawrinka.
That's the afternoon match on Monday with Pierre Hugues Herbert against Nicolas Mahut.
Oh.
Those two.
Who've had a really not very successful second half of the season. After storming to everything first half of the season, they look completely unbeatable. It's since the Olympics, really, which I think was a desperate disappointment for them. It's been rocky by their high standards. Who is coming through? I'm going to go for Wawrinka. I mean, as I say that, I'm obviously fully aware that there's just as much chance that he'll crash and burn and lose every match, pathetically, in the way that there always is with Stan Wawrinka. But equally, he could barnstorm that group and win every match and win the whole thing. So I'll put my chips on Wawrinka on this occasion.
Yeah, I'm going Nishikori. I think he is so good at taking time away that he will find a way to win that one. And then we've got Murray against Cilic in the evening session. I think that could be really close. Cilic is playing so well at the moment.
He wasn't against John Isner, though.
All right, fine. Well, you have to spoil it, don't you?
No. I'm being contrary, David. You're right. He's playing brilliantly, and if he just comes out firing and sort of stuns Andy Murray and stuns the crowd, you know, the big, oh, here's Andy Murray, you're world number one, and then here comes Marin Cilic serving bombs and whacking winners from both wings, and everybody goes, oh, this isn't what we thought we were going to get from watching the first British male number one.
How nervous do you think Andy Murray's going to be? Because I've often thought that when he comes out at the O2, he looks pretty anxious. And, I mean, there's going to be a real kind of celebratory mood, I think, initially when he comes out. It'll be a fantastic atmosphere. I'm trying to work out whether that'll soothe him a little and he'll feel as though, you know what, everybody's here for me and on my side, I feel all right. Or whether that will stress him out a bit.
I think he's got so much better at owning that kind of situation in recent years. I think it could, I like the word, soothe him a bit. But then he was so obviously so anxious against Thomas Burdick, wasn't he, in that match to get to the final in Paris. So nervous. To get to the semi-final, which ended up not happening, sorry. That quarter-final just after Djokovic had lost and it all suddenly was in his hands. He did look so nervy. And I know that was a very unique situation. And he's not... I mean, he is playing to retain the world number one ranking, but it's not a you must win this specific match to retain the world number one ranking. It's not quite as simple as that. I found Andy Murray's approach to this tournament a little bit unfathomable along the years. I mean, it could well be anxiety that you're seeing in him in previous years as he walks onto the court. There's definitely something. He definitely hasn't been completely at ease. And I do wonder if he will seem more at ease this year.
Just having a look at his results last year, Catherine, if you remember, he came in and there were even question marks as to whether he would play it because of the Davis Cup final that was still to come.
Well, but he'd suggested he might not, hadn't he?
Yeah, he had.
Davis Cup semi-final, he'd said it to Russell Fuller. He'd put the question mark there.
That's right. He ended up playing it, of course. And, I mean, he beat David Ferrer in his first match. I think it was his first match, or the third one. I can't remember which order they played. And then he lost to Nadal and Wawrinka in the group stages, both of them in straight sets. And it was... it was a different guy to the one we're seeing right now. I mean, I think I do feel that it was complicated by the fact that he'd got the Davis Cup final coming up, and there was so much being directed towards that, even if not consciously, subconsciously. There was, wasn't there?
I think consciously, and the change of surface of the Davis Cup final as well, knowing that that was on clay, knowing he would have to head straight out there to start hitting on clay to adjust to the indoor clay surface. I mean that was a really strange circumstance, I think, and the gods conspired last year to really, really not let it go in the favour of Andy Murray. But really different this year. I mean, yeah, it goes without saying, doesn't it? He's world number one. He's got a lot to play for. Djokovic, the draw really makes it interesting, because I do think after the group stages, we're going to be suddenly going, hang on a second, Djokovic has looked really good. And Murray has... Well, what I suspect will happen is we'll go into the semi-finals and we'll go... Hang on, Djokovic has looked the best so far, and you know what does that mean? And what I hope is that we'll head into a Murray Djokovic final, and we'll get that showdown that I think men's tennis deserves.
Do you know the other thing that I think could happen with Andy Murray? You know when he beat Grigor Dimitrov at the US Open, and it was almost uncomfortable to watch because of the manner in which he beat him. He was so comprehensive and he was so aggressive. You know, Djokovic has, over the last couple of years, just been wiping the floor with good players and reveling in it, it seemed to me. You know, I am so much better than everybody and I love proving it. And I just wonder whether Murray, with his newfound world number one status, may just come out and say to everybody and put on a display that just tells everybody, reminds everybody that he's the boss, he's the world number one, and now things are different.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah, I'd love to see him do that. I really would. I'd love to see him, well, own it again. I just said he's got better at owning those sorts of things. So I think that'd be awesome if we saw that kind of Andy Murray. I'd love that.
He'd have to play some really assertive tennis, given the three guys he's playing. I mean, if he was up against Monfils, in some regards, I think he could afford to play whatever type of tennis he wants and probably win either way. And I'm not trying to denigrate Monfils, but just Monfils' tactics.
The matchup suits him.
Yeah, it suits Murray in many ways. But Cilic, can he knock him off the court? Maybe he can with cat and mouse tennis. I was looking at a video the other day of his 2005 second or third professional match at Queen's against Thomas Johansson, and the combinations that he was putting up against a former Australian Open champion he was humiliating the guy. He's drop shotting and he's lobbing and you know, against the bigger guys like Cilic, that becomes the attacking move. And I'm just trying to work out how he's going to play this, but we could see something really spectacular from Murray where he just blitzes all of these guys. And I sometimes think with Wawrinka, can he do that against Wawrinka? And then I think back to the French Open of this year when he did,
yeah.
You know, he played against Wawrinka in the semis. Wawrinka started brilliantly, but eventually Murray just dissected him.
Yeah, well, the answer with Wawrinka is don't get him, give him a chance to hit the purple patch. Take the racket out of his hands. I remember Wawrinka's press conference after that match, and he was completely matter of fact. He just said, "Well, I didn't have a chance against Murray today. You know, I might be the defending champion, and yeah, this sort of hurts, but doesn't hurt nearly as much as coming off the court from a match where I felt like had I done something differently, I would have had a better chance." He said, "There's nothing I could have done today." So the template is there. I think that'd be awesome if we saw that Andy Murray. Awesome.
It'd also be interesting to see what the others could put up against it, really. But anyway, all to come over the next few days. Catherine, come on then. Your semi-finals are going to be...
Oh, well, what did I say? I said Murray against team. I'm changing to team. You were very convincing, David. No, did I say team? No, I did say team. Murray against team. And
I was so convincing. You just subconsciously...
I doubted myself for a moment. I did say team. I said it would be Monfils that might challenge Djokovic. But as you were saying you thought it would be team, I was agreeing with you. And I've just confessed to that unnecessarily. Anyway... what do I think? Murray against team and Wawrinka against Djokovic. There you go.
And the final is going to
be... Wawrinka against Djokovic. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
In fact, both of those matches are fine. So let's just... Given the power we have on the tennis podcast, that's decided. So your final is going to be...
Murray against Djokovic.
Fantastic. And who's going to win?
I think if Murray gets to that final, he will... win. I see a bigger question mark over Murray getting to the final than Djokovic, honestly. But I think if he gets to that final, I think it'll be a good match, and I think we'll see a better Djokovic than we've seen of late. But I think Murray will take it. There we go.
Catherine Whittaker here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. I'm not going to give any predictions. That's fine. So what else should we talk about? You going to go along with that, Kathy? You going to let me get away with that? She is fine.
Dare I point out again, it's all basically irrelevant, isn't it? So if you want to let us all know what you think, then fine. But
I can't believe you're just dissing the tennis podcast. The whole
ethos
of the tennis podcast is irrelevant.
Quickly then, what's going to happen?
Well, what's going to happen is it's going to be Andy Murray against Dominic Thiem. It is going to be... It's going to be either Nishikori or Cilic. I don't think Wawrinka makes it. Who do I think? I think Cilic is coming through. Yeah, I think Cilic will lose to Murray on day one, but I think he'll ultimately go through. So it'll be Cilic.
You said Nishikori earlier, by the by.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I said Nishikori would beat Stan Wawrinka is what I said. That's what I said, Catherine Whittaker. Rewind the tennis podcast immediately.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, sorry. What's the rest of the prediction?
Right, fine. So it's going to be Cilic against Novak Djokovic. It's going to be Andy Murray against Dominic Thiem. It'll be in the final, Andy Murray against Marin Cilic.
Really?
There you go. Marin Cilic is in the final. And
you think Cilic is going to beat Djokovic for the second time in 2 weeks?
You heard me.
Wowzers.
That took some doing to predict that, because the chances are remote. So I'll either be a genius or I'll be a dunce, one of the two. So I've got Andy Murray against Marin Cilic, and I've got Murray winning the title. Yeah, that'll happen. Do I think Murray will beat Cilic? I think Cilic might win all of it. I've got a feeling Cilic is going to win the whole thing. That's what I think.
David Law proving just how relevant predictions are.
Marin Cilic for the title is what I'm saying. So there we are. Houses. Here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Let's just have another quick look at the there's some good doubles, isn't there? Feliciano Lopez and Mark Lopez are playing together as well, and Henry Continon and John Pierce. So who's going to win the doubles? Are you going to go partisan and go with Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez? What do you think?
Well, they are the favourites, so it wouldn't be
Favourites? What about Pierre Hugerbert and Nicolas Mou? I just love saying
Well, as I say, they've had a woeful, well, not woeful, but by their standards, they're not coming in with much form at all. I think Murray and Suarez are definitely coming through their group. I think the Lopez's might win the whole thing. I think possibly the Lopez's against the Murray-Suarez in the final, with the Lopez's to win.
Okay, I don't even think that can happen, but, you know, it doesn't matter.
I think anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
Of course it can happen.
Because, of course,
one qualifies second and the other qualifies first. And anyway, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Catherine Whittaker, you heard it here first. So we'll see. I think it is going to be Suarez Navarro. No, she's not playing. Bruno Suarez and Jamie Murray are going to win the title. There you go. I don't know who they're going to beat. Maybe the Bryan brothers. We'll see. It's all fun and games, and it's all for us to look forward to over the next week. Quick pole vault, Catherine. I know you've been waiting. So let's have a look. What have we asked of people here? In fact, of course, we've asked them for their own predictions for the ATP finals, and we can see the responses here. Who will win the ATP finals at the O2? 427 votes in the last 3 hours. Andy Murray's got 64%. Novak Djokovic has got 17%. Vavrinka's got 12%. And then another, i.e. my prediction of Marin Cilic et al., only 7%. So there's a groundswell of opinion in the favour of Andy Murray. We've got 72% think that Djokovic will win his group, with Raonic second on 13%, 9% for Thiem and 6% for Monfils. And in the McEnroe group, we've got Andy Murray on 78%, with Wawrinka second on 13, Cilic on 6, and Nishikori on 3. Poor old Nishikori. He's only got 3% backing to get out of his group. But that's all to come. I haven't really got any other categories on it this week, I'm afraid, Catherine. Just a few memories from people. I asked what people's favourite O2 Arena memory was, and virtually everybody has said the same match. Can you guess what it is?
Is it now Bandy and Federer?
No, I said O2 match, not pre-O2.
Oh, O2 match. Is it Federer-Wawrinka?
Yes, it is Federer-Wawrinka from 2014. And it just proves that all of the Tennis Podcast listeners, Catherine, as much as they love tennis, they also love aggro.
Starring Federer and Wawrinka with a brief but significant cameo from Cedric Mourier.
Yes, and Roger's wife, who called Stan Wawrinka a baby.
Yeah.
During the match. That was awesome, wasn't it?
It was pretty cool. I was in the crowd for that, actually, and it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So that's all to come. What else have we had? We had a couple of other suggestions for great matches. There was Federer's schooling of Murray, 6-love, 6-1, says Tom Moore. That's a bit mean-spirited, Tom. Goodness me. And what about pre-O2 finals, when the tournament used to be known as the Tennis Masters Cup et al.? Have you got any corkers there?
Well, now Bandy and Federer. Sorry, I've rather scooped myself there. But yeah.
You did rather.
Now Bandy and Federer. I also saw somebody on Twitter recalling the year Guga beat Agassi and Sampras. That was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, it was. I was on the court for that. I was a communications manager for the ATP just seconds after Agassi had been defeated by Gustavo Kuerten in Portugal. I mean, the sound of the crowd chanting Agassi's name first of all in defeat. I mean, he looked shell shocked. He couldn't really react to their cheers, but it was as loud as I've ever heard, I think, in a stadium. Ali says the Leighton Hewitt against Juan Carlos Ferrero final in 2002 in Shanghai, when Hewitt came back from two sets. Oh no, hold on a sec. Ferrero came back from two sets down to level it before Hewitt won it in the fifth. And that was the days, yeah, when it used to be a best of five set final. These days it's a best of three, but it has had some great matches, hasn't it? I slightly miss, although I love the fact, I think they present it brilliantly at the O2, and the way they have two sessions a day and they sell them all out and they only literally have one singles and one doubles, and that's kind of enough for a session. The one thing I slightly miss is when it used to be singles only is when you just had the singles lines on the court. You didn't have the doubles tram lines at all. And I used to think that was a brilliant way of just giving a kind of identity to the tournament. You knew exactly what you were watching the moment you turned on the TV.
You're such a purist, David. Such a purist.
Well, there you go. Catherine Whittaker. You're too young to remember that, aren't you?
I am too young to remember that.
Yeah, crikey.
I've got nothing, David.
No, you haven't got anything for that, have you? Catherine, I got an absolute avalanche of abuse today on social media because I dared to question a couple of the awards that had been given in the ATP Awards. Didn't see you jump into my defence.
I really struggle to engage with the ATP Awards. I think they're a nice thing to do, but not really of any consequence or significance.
Did you see what I did to get everybody so aerated?
You questioned why Federer, having only played half the season, was yet again awarded the sportsmanship award.
I did do that. What do you think? You're going to say I don't care, aren't you?
I'm going to say that Federer is a brilliant sportsman. As you pointed out, Del Potro would have been a very worthy recipient as well, but it's voted for by players, and I don't think they spend a whole evening racking their brains and sitting around and making sure they've absolutely made the best possible nomination. I think they just sit at their computers for 5 minutes and go, oh yeah, Federer, we all love Federer, don't we? Click. Done.
I thought they sat by the fire and just kind of, you know...
Well, maybe I'm doing them a disservice and I've got this all wrong, but I rather suspect that you have put more thought and consideration into it than the majority of the ATP World Tour players have. Sorry,
the entirety of the world put together.
Yeah.
Until such a point as I dared question whether Roger Federer might not have won it for a 12th year. And then I got abused for saying that. And then what else was I talking about as well?
Do you remember that year when Pat Rafter won Australian of the Year after he'd retired? It's a bit like that, isn't it? Not that Federer's retired, but, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't even have to pick up a racket to win these awards.
Oh, do you know the other one that got everybody going was Coach of the Year? Because this is a new category in the ATP Awards. And it was won by Magnus Norman, who... I do genuinely think he's one of the best coaches in the world. I think he's so clever and his attention to detail is immaculate, and I think he's made a massive difference to Stan Wawrinka. But when you looked at the nominations and there was no Boris Becker on there, there was no Marion Vider on there, and yet they'd coached a guy who had won, whether however much influence they had or not, who knows, but who had won two Grand Slam titles in the year, had, you know, completed the career slam, had won four in a row, effectively, and they didn't even get a mention. Lendl was on there.
They should have been on the list. At least one of them should. There should have been Djokovic coaching representation on the list, and that sort of makes a bit of a mockery of it all. Maybe Pepe Imaz will get on the list next year.
Maybe Catherine Whittaker's favourite, who she's going to be seeking out at the O2 for special advice about her forehand and other things. The other one that got people going, Mike Dixon from the Daily Mail, who incidentally got the Ron Bookman Award for Media Excellence, and rightly so, in my opinion, one of the most long-standing members of the media.
How do you, How does one get nominated for that award?
Just by generally being brilliant, apparently. I don't think there are nominations as such like that. I think that they have a chat backstage about the ATP, and they work out who it's going to be. At least it was when I was at the ATP back in the day. We haven't had a mention, Catherine, so we're not likely to either, especially given that I keep questioning who all the awards are going to. But Mike's one of the best journalists around, so I can well understand that. However, the coach of the year bit, the other question mark was over Ivan Lendl getting in there and Jamie Delgado, who has kind of carried the load with Andy Murray for week in, week out. He hasn't got a mention.
Yeah, but I mean...
But do you think, is it kind of like an award that if Lendl's getting it, then Delgado's kind of getting it too?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's just the deal, isn't it? The headline guy gets the glory. And possibly the people in those dark, shady rooms where the nominations are made have the same feeling of us. Which is that I'm sure Delgado is doing really, really important stuff and the results speak for themselves, but I don't actually quite know exactly what it is he does do, what his role precisely is and how the balance quite works when Lendl's around and all of that. It works, and I'm not questioning his input at all. I'm just doubting my own knowledge of the specifics of that input and... maybe they feel the same. I don't know.
If you were a top tennis player, I know this is a stretch. If you were a top tennis player, who would you like to be coached by?
Oh, well, coach of the year, Magnus Norman.
Why is that?
I think Goran would be good fun, though. Well, because he's coach of the year. I would need all the help I could get, David. I'd need to be employing the best in the biz. Let's put it that way. So I'd be going for Coach of the Year.
In fact, if she surrounded herself by the entire fraternity of nominees, I think that maybe you could beat me in our rematch. So who would I go for? I'd need somebody who could get the best out of a big server who doesn't know where it's going, wouldn't I? So I would definitely go...
You need that now, David.
Yeah, I would definitely go for Goran.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, because I've heard Goran's coaching methods. They basically amount to... I mean, look, maybe I'm being unfair here, but it seems to me that they basically amount to, look, you're massive, you hit the ball incredibly hard, now go and kill the guy.
But that's the irony of your game, David. To you, he'd be saying, look, you're massive, and for some reason you don't hit the ball very hard. What's going on there?
I do hit the ball hard. What are you talking about? I don't know where it's going, but I hit it quite hard, don't I?
Not your serve, you don't. Not as hard as you should. The power to height ratio is not where it should be. Let's put it that way.
Oh.
I think that's a wrap, folks.
I think so. I just had my balloon popped there, really. But Catherine Whittaker, thanks very much for being on the Tennis Podcast. It's been an absolute joy.
Always a pleasure, David. Amore pass.
Can't wait for the
you.
Next one. And yeah, I think I need to see him just to cheer me up after that. But yeah, listen, everybody, I'll try and get over that. Have a good week. Enjoy the tennis. Catherine will be commentating on it on TalkSport 2. I'll be commentating on it on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra alongside Russell Fuller. And we'll also have lots of stuff on 5 Live as well. It'll be on BBC Television, the afternoon matches in the UK, and on Sky Sports in the evening. I'm sure... all around the world, and we've got lots of listeners all around the world, there will be places for you to watch this stuff. It's going to be an amazing week of tennis. I have to say, Catherine, I'm really excited. It's going to be great, isn't
for
it?
For a change. Yeah, it is going to be good.
For a change, I'm excited. And we will be back with more tennis podcasts. Not really sure when, but we will speak to you very soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.